Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by MUBI. For your free 30-day trial, go to mubi.com/filmstage. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the official podcast. Filmstage.com. I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me today to talk about the newest film in the DC Cinematic Universe, Wonder Woman, we have Michael Snydell.
Hello.
Hello. We also have Bill Graham.
Hello.
And we have a special guest, Allison Shoemaker.
Hi there.
Hello. Allison, why don't you tell the fine folks at home a little bit about yourself?
Well, let's see. I'm a film and TV critic. I'm a senior writer at Consequence of Sound and a TV club writer for the AV Club, as well as doing some TV and film writing other places. And I do a couple of other podcasts, most of which are pretty fun and silly, which is my cup of tea. So that's me.
Well, you should fit in just fine here, because we nothing if not fun and silly.
Good.
We even got a review saying that exact thing.
Yeah, but in fact, I think it was a negative review saying that we were too silly. So I don't know what to do about that. To address the elephant in the room, I sound different this week. That is because I'm currently at the beach with my family, and I only brought my headphones with a microphone and not my usual crazy setup. And so I apologize, but you know, I'm just not willing to go out of my way. For you.
I really hope you're actually recording on the beach.
I was thinking about it, but there's a storm blowing in tonight, and the wind is like at a constant 30 miles per hour, and the waves are crashing, and so maybe like towards the end I'll step out onto the balcony and you all can get a taste of what we're living with here. But no, I decided to just record in my room in the house that we have. That's enough about me and my vacation. Let's talk about MUBI, which is bringing you today's episode. Actually, since we're going to talk about MUBI, I do have to talk more about my vacation. Everyone at home knows that MUBI is the streaming service that offers you a new film each day that you can enjoy for 30 days, so you always have a rotating selection of 30 films, and I've been talking for a while about how you're able to download them to your mobile devices so you can watch them on the go. The Wi-Fi at this beach house is fairly okay, but luckily I got some MUBI films pre-downloaded just in case. And like I said, I use this as a way to avoid going outside, because yesterday I fully covered myself in sunscreen, went out for a conservative hour and a half, and now I can barely move, because my fair Irish skin just will not brook with any sunshine upon it. And so, I'm miserable, I'm keeping good spirits, I'm drinking as much as I can, but I'm fairly sober right now, so I think that we'll be fine. But anyway, MUBI is more effective than sunscreen at giving you a good beach experience. If you're a MUBI fan, all you have to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage, and you'll get a free 30-day trial of MUBI on us. That, again, is mubi.com/filmstage.
I think you just can't put the tagline, Brian. It's not a very versatile one, but it is a tagline.
I'm not good at taglines. Every tagline I seem to come up with for MUBI is just unwieldy and crazy.
I think I've MUBI's called better it... than sunscreen is pretty good, though.
MUBI is better than sunscreen. All right. That's all. I suppose we should say you can follow us on Twitter at Film Stage Show. You follow us on Facebook. Search for The Film Stage Show. Email us podcast@filmstage.com. And if you would like to give us a 5-star rating and talk about our silliness, rather than the person who gave us a negative review while talking about our silliness, you can find us on iTunes and give us a comment and a rating there. But that is that. Let's talk about the film that dominated this weekend and seems to be on track to dominate next weekend. That is Wonder Woman, which is the newest film in the DC Cinematic Universe. This film was directed
bleh.
By... Did you say what?
No, I said bleh.
Oh yeah. As a general rule of thumb, we're not technically fans of the DC Cinematic Universe thus far, but maybe this movie will change some minds. So this was directed by Patty Jenkins and it stars Gal Gadot and Chris Pine, amongst many other fine actors. Here is the trailer.
The gods gave us many gifts. One day you'll know them all. This is where we keep them.
It's beautiful. Who would wield it?
Only the fiercest among us even could. And that is not you, Diana. You will train her harder than any Amazon before her. 5 times harder. 10 times harder.
Never let your guard down. You expect the battle to be fair.
Until she is better than even you. But she must never know the truth.
All right, Wonder Woman. A character who, I believe, just turned 73. All right. So a character who just turned 73, coming to the big screen in the new DC Snyderverse form, but not directed by Zack Snyder this time. So let's see what we all thought of the Patty Jenkins-directed film Wonder Woman. Allison, you are our guest, so let us start with you.
Well, I really liked this movie. I'm also not a DC Entertainment Universe fan, although I think that for the most part, their television shows fare a little bit better than their films, because a couple of those shows at least have not forgotten that entertainment is supposed to be entertaining. So, I've got some warm feelings for the Greg Berlanti arm of the DC Entertainment Universe.
The Berlantiverse.
Totally. But whereas the Snyderverse has left me very cold. And that's not the case with this film. It's an experience that sort of got put naturally into two boxes for me. One was just how much I enjoyed it as a movie, as an audience member, as a critic. And the answer is I enjoyed it very much. And this is something that seems to be common among people who happen to be both female identifying and fans of either cinema or comics, that it was also kind of moving. The experience of watching a female superhero who was incredibly powerful was never, to use another critic's phrase, filmed for slobbers, I think was the quote. It really was quite an experience, and I've seen it since. I saw a critic screening, and I've seen it since then, and my reaction was much the same, only it was great to just sit back and enjoy it as opposed to sitting back and thinking, I have to make sure I'm actually enjoying this as much as I think I am, and not just weeping because it exists. So
that is one of the hardest things that you can do as a film critic. Is just like, am I just happy that this is here? Or is this actually a good movie? Not in nearly the same way, but I have to go through that every time I see a Terrence Malick film. Just because I'm such a fanboy. And I'm like, oh, hooray, it's happening. And I'm like, what if all the other hundreds of millions of people are right and this is actually terrible? But Michael Snydell, why don't you tell us your all-around feelings on Wonder Woman?
I like Wonder Woman with some qualms. I mean, I do have to piggyback a little bit on what Allison says just about the visceral thrill of being able to see a female superhero. I mean, there's a few moments here that even if they weren't delivered fantastically, that they just, you know, it'd be impossible to not get some goosebumps or chills at certain moments. And we can obviously get into those specific sequences later on. But there are a few times where this movie, again, by purely existing, it feels extremely powerful at times. By that same token, there's as much to be made about representation as as it is a movie that's really interested in just kind of a very elemental meaning of superhero, in the sense of, like, while so many superhero movies these days, especially in the DC universe, have been about, you know, the toll of being a superhero and seeing so many people die, this kind of taps into just the great excitement and power that comes from watching someone stand up to something that seems unbeatable, and being able to especially connect that to World War One, which is just, you know, a historical event that has just such significance and just is such a specter in our history. It's possibly the best combination of the superhero ethos and an historical event. Personally, I liked it better than Captain America, the first Captain America, first Avenger, which I know a lot of people have compared it to. Now, with that said, I do have some qualms about where it goes, not only in the third act, but in general when it does feel a bit more paint by numbers. But in general, like Jenkins, for being a director who, you know, has primarily been on TV and done fantastic work, it's still incredible to see the just kind of the warmth and, you know, sensuality that she brings to the early parts of this movie, which is just almost unseen in superhero movies these days. So I can't say it's quite great, but there are a lot of things here that, you know, make me wonder, maybe I'm not quite done with superhero movies.
All right. Bill Graham, what about yourself?
Yeah, I'll see if I can refrain from mentioning the other DCEU films in this kind of brief snippet. But yeah. I do want to mention that this film was quite a joy to behold, even though it deals with World War One and kind of the repercussions. All the stuff on Themyscira, which, if you're not familiar with Wonder Woman, that would be kind of Paradise Island or the Island of the Amazons or whatever island that you want to kind of basically pretend that is hidden away from males with some kind of fog feature divined by the gods and given to the, I guess, Wonder Woman and her clan. And like all of that stuff, the first portion of this film, the first probably 30 minutes, is absolutely fantastic. Robin Wright gives a hell of a performance as a general that's training Gal Gadot. Everything on that island is just absolutely fantastic. It's lush, it's beautiful, it's gorgeous. And the cinematography really seems to It's so unfortunate because, you know, the film kind of has to take place in World War One, and when it transitions over, you lose a lot of that kind of brightness and that pop. But I think considering the tone and considering what they're actually dealing with, it makes sense in that way to go from that kind of bright and airy place to somewhere where it just has a little bit more depth to it. And then the other thing I'll say is Gal Gadot, this really is her kind of breakout performance as a superstar. I listened to a couple of people talking about this film earlier, and they were mentioning that this may actually swallow Gal Gadot whole in a way that I don't think a lot of people are kind of in anticipating. And by that I mean she is going to probably forever be linked to Wonder Woman from this point forward. This really is kind of a star-making performance. The film has already brought in over $100 million. I do not see that really slowing down, especially with the critical word of mouth and then you know, the A Cinema score and all these other factors kind of playing into it, and just the simple fact that damn it, this film is fun to watch. It's a joy to watch. It's a little long. It's towards the end. It's got some issues. It's certainly got some pacing issues. But boy, considering the pedigree of the DCEU films before it, considering some of the other films in kind of and you know, a lot of people like to shit on the DCEU, but I mean, it's also some of the other, like the Fox and the Sony comic book movies are also getting fairly dour and fairly just, you know, not entertaining at all. And so this really is kind of a change of pace. And it's nice to have a female director directing a female led film, and, you know, it to have success and not be questioned along the way. It's just a really enjoyable film overall. I've got more nitpicks to kind of throw out there, but I think that's good enough for now.
Okay. So what did I think of this film? I guess one of the first things I'll say is that, yes, I will have nits to pick in the spoiler section. One of the issues with superhero films nowadays is they all tend to end in a similar fashion. And this one seems to be moving in a direction that it won't, but then it does, which is sad. But previous to that, which conservatively I'd call like the final 15 minutes of this film, I actually had a really good time at this movie, which is good.
Holy shit!
I was sort of expecting it, but like DC movies, the DCEU has trained me to expect that I will be disappointed no matter how much I like a trailer or the talent involved. So, you know, like, I have enjoyed the films of David Ayer. I hated Suicide Squad with a passion.
Yep, yep.
I think that Zack Snyder is capable of doing good work, and I have hated Batman v Superman. I thought Man of Steel was fine, but it has not built on that at all. And so here comes Wonder Woman with Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot and Chris Pine and Robin Wright and Connie Nelson and David Thewlis, who I love, and Danny Houston and Ewan Bremner, Spud. And I've just got, like, I've got all these good feelings and I'm just waiting for the movie to disappoint me, which is terrible, but it's like going to pet a dog that always bites you, you know? Like, you hope for the best, but you know what's coming. And so when the movie doesn't do that, I was like all the more happy and excited. And so there's a lot of good things to say about this. I went and saw this alone, as part of my convalescence from my murderous sunburn. And so, but I'm kind of looking forward to, I have a daughter who is approaching her first birthday, and I'm kind of looking forward to like the day that I can show her this and be like, look, there's someone to aspire to be, because it's hard to find a good role model really anywhere for a child. I started thinking about, like, if I have a son, what movies would I show him? And I had a lot of trouble because a lot of the male characters in the world have a lot of really repellent characteristics that you kind of have to be mature enough to navigate around. And you would usually say, oh, we'll go for Superman, because Superman is like a literal Boy Jesus. Scout. But, like, not anymore. So that's an issue. And so in that way, Wonder Woman would probably be the best example of what I would show my future son as well, because here is a hero who has out-Supermaned Superman in his own universe.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know, people are always like, Superman's so boring because he's about truth, justice, and the American way, which is, you know, technically correct, but, like, those are virtues that I think are fine and are noble in the correct way, and yet the modern Superman doesn't do that at all. So now we have Wonder Woman, who stands up for equally simplistic ideals, but does so in a way that is, you know, dynamic and really interesting. And yeah, so just on an existential level, I think this movie hits every tone that the DCEU films have failed to hit previously in a way that's fun, but also impactful, and it maintains some of that real-world grittiness that I think they've been trying to insert. This movie also bolsters my idea that every superhero ought to just be cast in one of the two world wars, because, you know, not having to build the universe, you know, just having this world-spanning conflict, I mean, it worked great for Captain America the First Avenger, and it works great here. And I just don't see any reason to bring them into the modern world and have them deal with our modern problems, because it always just it grinds these movies to a halt when they have to.
Yeah, seeing Wonder Woman use a laptop to send an email to Bruce Wayne wasn't like peak cinema for me.
Well, it's not only that, but it's like Civil War. You know, they're like basically like not negotiating concepts of like terrorism and like extrajudicial rendition. And it's like, yeah, that's fine. That's an interesting idea, but I would love my base superhero movie to, you know, have them be more godlike, you know, just to have a little more like primary color simplicity. You know, do something interesting and exciting in like an Indiana Jones type vein. You know, Indiana Jones doesn't wander around talking about how we gave the Nazis too much at Munich and that's why we're in the middle of this now. You know, but every modern superhero film seems to want to stretch that way. So I think that casting them in the past, where we are allowing ourselves to have a little more of a moral black and white vision, really aids these things in clarifying their entire purpose for being.
Feels like, Brian, just to, you know, it was interesting that you mentioned Civil War, and a lot of these modern superhero movies is, you know, they seem like they're, you know, they are meant to obviously be the continuation of after origin stories, but they're also, you know, so mired in so many comic book in jokes and like self-awarenesses that they're worried the fans will like not be interested in these basic stories. And Wonder Woman finds a really nice balance between that origin story and, you know, a larger ethos. And I think that specifically, as you said, through that, you know, having a concrete setting of the world war just gives her a very clear vision that also doesn't really come through in some origin stories.
Yeah, and it's also great because you get to avoid like cameos. I think that in all honesty, Batman v Superman suffered from a plethora of cameos that really, really, really takes you out of the movie. Like I said, it simplifies and it clarifies and it makes everything better. I think that the action, cinematography, and choreography in this movie is like just, I would say, head and shoulder, but it's really like four whole human body lengths above anything that we saw in Suicide Squad.
Oh, geez, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, every single cut brings you to a new angle on the same action happening, so you always feel like you know what's happening. I mean, it's the most basic of action movie, you know, creation, but we've been missing it for so long that it feels refreshing to see it here. And, you know,
it's edited in a blender.
Yeah. It's a well-made movie that has great actors. I think Gal Gadot, who I've loved in everything from the Fast and the Furious movies to 999, pause for effect because I brought up 999.
Yes.
is great. And Chris Pine, you know, who I used to think pretty little of, you know, between this and Hell or High Water and a couple of other things he's done. I guess I just don't like Captain Kirk as a character, because Chris Pine is fantastic.
He's fantastic in that role, though, in that Star Trek role. That first film, he really owns it, and man, you know, those lips.
All right.
It should also be said that Chris Pine is maybe the only good part of Into the Woods, which includes Meryl Streep and Emily Blunt and a bunch of other great performers. And somehow, of all of the people in that massive ensemble, the only one that I left thinking, man, he did a great job, was Chris Pine, who did really, really well in that terrible movie.
I never even saw that, so I'm going to have to take your word on it. But I will say,
oh, don't bother.
I'll back it up. Yeah.
I swear to everyone among us that I will never see Into the Woods. I will say, there's a movie called Stretch.
Oh, yes.
With Patrick Wilson?
Yeah, with Patrick Wilson. And Chris Pine is amazing in that as well.
Oh, you know where I originally ran into Chris Pine? And I just remembered this now. Smoking Aces. He is one of the what did they call him? The brothers. The Lightning Brothers or the Earthquake Brothers or something like that. He's just like a manic crazy person, one of the assassins in that film. And he's delightful in that film.
I will take your word for it because I think that film. Oh wait, no.
I think the one thing too is I mean I've liked him in rom coms. He's pretty good in Just My Luck, but the one thing I'd say is I think when he finds a way to bury like a possible smugness and like can emphasize an earnestness like in this, and then The Finest Hours last year was pretty good too because he got to be kind of a very earnest, like, you know, period hero, and I think in this role he absolutely excels because he doesn't.
Let's not forget Unstoppable as well. I'm being 100% serious when I say that.
Yeah, I enjoyed the hell out of that movie.
Yeah. But so to get us off of the smoldering, you know, luscious-lipped, blue-eyed Chris Pine, and back to Wonder Woman. Yeah, I think that this is the best. This is going to sound like damning with faint praise. It's the best DCEU film, but it's also a damn good film. In and of itself, I'm not saying like, well, they finally got one sort of okay. Like this, if this were them coming out of the gate, you'd have nothing to worry about.
Yeah. They should just scrap everything else and just be like, hey, sorry guys, this is the one.
This is technically a soft reboot.
Like everything else was Hulk. This is our Iron Man.
Yeah. So what's also funny though is that. Yeah, this movie makes Batman v Superman like worse in retrospect because I firmly believe that this movie should have come out first.
Yeah,
like everything that we saw in Batman v Superman would have been better if we had seen this movie first. Down to the inclusion of her theme music.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's
which is actually used rather sparingly because, from what I understand, sure. The composer is not obviously Hans Zimmer, so he uses it here and there because, you know, it's now the Wonder Woman theme, but other than that, yeah. It's a completely wholly non-Hans Zimmer theme.
But I think in this movie it is integrated and executed perfectly the two or three times that it happens, whereas I literally laughed out loud when it happened in Batman v Superman because it was so tonally different from everything else that we'd heard in that movie.
Sure.
But yes, so all in all, you know, 4.5 stars, good work. I really like this movie. And as I said, it's a movie that takes everything that we've seen in the DCEU, from music to choreography to cinematography to tone to acting to, you know, even Snyder-esque touches like, you know, extreme close-ups in slow motion, and just does all of them so much better that it's like almost a shame that it's like the fourth movie in the DCEU. But you know, if they can kind of keep up this goodness, but they've already shot Justice League, so I don't know. That's actually a good way to move forward a little bit. Does this make us feel better about the future of the DCEU, or are we going to look back on this and say, like, what a terrible 8-movie series, but at least Wonder Woman was good?
The hope is that because we don't know what Aquaman's going to bring to it, we don't know what Flash is going to bring to it, we certainly don't have a clue what Cyborg is going to bring to it, if anything. That character just seems dull as dirt. But you know, the inclusion of Wonder Woman in that film series as more of like a central character can only be a good thing, I think. And, you know, having Jason Momoa as Aquaman, I think, can only be a good thing for that series to just kind of fucking lighten it up. Because, man, that. But, ugh, that the trailers for that still bring me very little faith. It just looks like a gross looking film. It really does. It just looks like everything is CGI and everything. They're going to be fighting monsters that are like,
they're like grasshoppers. They look like the grasshoppers from A Bug's Life, in all honesty.
Yeah, they're basically like robotic grasshopper looking dudes, and it's just like, ugh, you Allison, guys are gross looking.
What about you? How do you see the DCEU moving on from this film?
Well, I think there are a lot of people, and if I'm being totally honest, I'm among them, who really can't wait for a Wonder Woman sequel. And that's pretty much how I feel about the DCEU. Like, I just, I'll probably see Justice League. Because I don't care. I didn't see either of the other entrants, and I still haven't seen Suicide Squad. I saw 15 minutes of Suicide Squad, and it was Kara, what's her face, fidgeting around. Yes, fidgeting around in her weird CGI gown with her voice altered, and then I was just out. I was like, nope. I've seen enough to know that everything they said about Margot Robbie is right, and then she seems very charismatic. Can't wait to see her in other movies, and I'm out. And I just kind of don't care. I will probably see Justice League because now I want to see Gal Gadot do literally everything. But I think that this kind of feels separate. It feels like it's its own little paradise island. And
it's its own little, what was the place named?
Themyscira.
Yeah. And maybe that's okay. But who knows? Maybe now that eyes have been opened, some more interesting directors will climb aboard. That would be great. So we'll see.
I'm worried because it really did seem like, you know, Batman v Superman came out on the heels of the Man of Steel, and it seemed like they had realized their mistake in making the ending of Man of Steel so destructive. But they didn't. They just made sure to insert more dialogue about how no one was in the area. And then after Batman v Superman didn't perform well, they're like, it's okay. We swear to God, Suicide Squad is going to be fun. And it was terrible. And this movie, again, it's kind of like when Marvel was doing its thing. You know, Captain America got to exist a full 70 years before all the other ones, and released from the history of the universe that it's trying to build, it was actually able to be a decent movie. And I don't know, man. I'm like, because they're already done shooting Justice League, so aside from doing more last-minute cuts like they did on Suicide Squad, I don't see how they're going to be able to play into the strengths that Wonder Woman showed and the things that people responded to in it. And I think that that's a problem that all of these franchises are going to have an issue with because they're in concurrent development and production.
Sure.
I just feel like Snyder has like given us three duds in a row. Whether it's Watchmen, whether it's Superman, and then Batman versus Superman,
well,
and
Bill, the owls of the Guardians? The owls
no,
of
no, I don't mean in like direct like lineage. I mean just like big superhero blockbuster films, and that's of course discounting 300 because that's not really a superhero film. It's a comic book movie, yes, a graphic novel, but you know I'm putting that off to the side. Anyways. I just feel like this man's like cachet is like he is a decent director. It's just, man, he just has his head up his own butt sometimes. And if Dawn of or whatever the hell the thing is, Justice League, if that's terrible too. Man, that guy has gotten all the luck in the world and then like cashed in on none of it. So I don't know. I'm not going to feel super bad for him if the film's not good, but I'm just going to feel really bad about myself for just continuously like hoping and dreaming that this guy is going to turn in another decent film. You know, so
it's just kind of interesting I'm going to make the dreaded comparison here, but you know, it is interesting that, you know, the studio kind of doubled down on a house style of Snyder, even when
he's got a style, and that's kind of what they were hoping for, is like, sure, you know, I watch a Zack Snyder film and I'm like, yep, this is a Zack Snyder film. Like there's no doubt about it. Like, you know, the color scheme and, you know, the motion ramping and the way he shoots things and his integration of music and all of this stuff and his, you know,
is it just like the cosmic mythology? Yeah. Like it's,
yeah, he's got a certain tone and a certain feel. So I don't necessarily blame them for doubling down on someone, right? Because obviously they tried their hardest to get Christopher Nolan on that, and he was like, nah, I'm good. Like, I gave y'all three of these damn things. Like, I'm gonna walk away now, and I'm gonna go make Inception and Dunkirk and whatever the hell else I want to make. So, you know, he owes nothing else to them. And, you know, when they couldn't get him, they were like, well, like, do you have another option? And I guess he put Zack Snyder forward. Because I do think the Snyders were actually – I think Deborah was actually behind one or two of the Batman films. I think they were producers on it. I can't remember for sure. But either way, I really want to move on to Wonderful.
Okay, we can move on. The last thing I want to say is it's slightly annoying to me that both Marvel and DC seem to have been cast in this mold. And it's like I almost want, you know, it's not that I inherently dislike superhero movies, but it's again this mass production style that is so tiring. Like it's not that superheroes can't be done in interesting ways, but it's just kind of frustrating that Marvel and DC already feel so so ingrained into a particular style and, you know, collection of themes and obviously like a franchise mentality. But just in general, like, it's just hard not to be immediately disheartened for the future of this, whether Snyder is involved or whether, you know, whatever the talent is. And this is obviously – Wonder Woman is obviously an anomaly in the sense of having Jenkins and her being able to, you know, bring a distinctive style even within the constraints of what are necessary to move this franchise forward. But it is it does certainly become like a little bit of a defeating conversation when we talk about Marvel and DC.
Well, the good news is that Jenkins is going to be back for the second film. So
that is true.
Yep, that was announced.
Oh, I didn't realize. I'm on vacation, so.
Yeah, you're right. That was announced recently, I think within the last few days, obviously on the tail end of this film making $103 million over the weekend. So it was definitely signed on the dotted line, and I believe Gal Gadot has a 3-picture deal, which is going to wrap up with Justice League, and so I think she is gonna make some money after this because, rightfully so.
It was good to see that Marvel hired another female director, Gina Prince Bythewood, last week, too, so that was kind of good.
I didn't even know those. That.
Yeah, yeah, I'm real excited for that. But
what is she directing?
It's called Fire and Ice, maybe.
It's a
Spider-Man spinoff or something. Whoa. I might be totally off.
Allison, I'm curious about your feelings on Marvel now that your feelings on the DCEU have been made known a little bit.
Well, I'm pretty into most of the Marvel movies. I'm especially into most of the Marvel television series, with some exceptions, because some of them are really, really bad. Iron Fist, but
do not have any desire to watch that damn thing.
No, that's a really wise. The way that you feel about me not seeing Suicide Squad is the way that I feel about you not taking any time to watch Iron Fist. So, okay. You know, I think that generally they're just slightly better made, if only because they're easier to watch. They're more fun to watch. They feel more distinct. Certainly not all of them are groundbreakingly original. I wouldn't say that any of these movies are sort of breaking barriers in any way. And I haven't found any of them as inspiring as I found Wonder Woman. But, I mean, there are some that I revisit. There are a few that I liked more seeing them a second time. I was pretty underwhelmed by Ant-Man and saw it again kind of recently and thought that was pretty solid. I think that both of the standalone Captain America movies are pretty great. I will follow Agent Carter and Jessica Jones until my dying day. And I enjoyed both of the Guardians movies. So, like, I think that they're better when they're more focused. They're better when they're not quite so beholden to the big franchise issues, which I think obviously is also true here. But I also think that maybe there are just better writers involved sometimes. It's just not quite such gloom and doom at all times, which I see a lot of movies that are very, very sad, and I love those movies. But when I go see a Superman movie, that's maybe not what I like. We all saw a bunch of really wonderful, very sad movies last year, and we will all see a bunch of really wonderful. Like, I don't need to go see Batman by Manchester by the Sea. It's not something that I ever need in my life. So I tend to be more of a Marvel girl in terms of my enjoyment.
I think that makes sense. Now, the one thing I wanted to talk about before we moved on, Patty Jenkins as a director. I mean, we've talked up and down about how much we liked this movie and the way it looks. The movie was originally going to be directed by Michelle MacLaren. And this is something that I like to always kind of look at whenever we know about something like this. Can anyone in this room, this digital space that we've created, imagine how this movie would have differed, do you think, if Michelle MacLaren had originally been had followed through to the end?
I've got thoughts.
Okay, go.
I think, but at the same time, I do want to say that if you had asked me what kind of movie Patty Jenkins would make based on the work of hers that I've seen, I would have said exactly what I'm about to say about Michelle MacLaren, which is that I think it probably would have been much darker. But when you've got the right property and the right story, there's no telling what you're going to do with it. My limited understanding, and please correct me if any of you know more, is that this was a creative differences situation, a little bit like Patty Jenkins leaving Thor 2, which, God, that's a hell of a loss. Now I'm just going to daydream about what the second Thor movie would have looked like if Patty Jenkins had been involved.
Yeah, it's apparently a Romeo and Juliet.
Romeo and Juliet style space opera.
Yeah.
Well, the unfortunate reality is, recently she's kind of come out and mentioned why she left that. And it was basically that there was a stalemate. They had a certain idea of what it should be, and she had a certain idea, and they just kind of mutually agreed to basically part ways. It's interesting because one of the reasons that she said she left was actually because she is a female director. And she said she kind of realized that if she was going to be in that position of directing this big budget female or big budget film as a female director, and it ended up being largely meh, that would not do well for her, gender and anything else, and that's a very wise but a very unfortunate reality of kind of Hollywood and the studio system right now, is that, like, she felt she had to run away from that property because it was probably not going to be all that good and well received. And it's like, man, just because of that, she was like, yeah, and I'm also a female, so this is not going to be a good situation.
It reminds me of, there's an episode of Veep, the HBO comedy, where Anna Chlumsky's character, Amy, is yelling at Selena Meyer and says, like, your only legacy will be that we'd never have another female president because we tried one and she sucked. And yeah. It's like, it's sad because we've had many male presidents who've sucked, and we still keep electing them. But it is like the way that Hollywood and the world at large tend to think, where it's like, if you are a female director on a big budget movie, you know, you can't just Colin Trevorrow your way through it and hope mm-hmm. for the best. Like, no one's going to stop hiring white men directors if the next Jurassic Park movie isn't great. But people will use this as a reason to just be an idiot and continue not hiring female directors. I'm hoping that now that this has become a success, that we will see the Michelle McLarens and the Mimi Letters of the world, just to name a couple of TV directors I know who I've loved the hell out of their work, get some opportunities to do some of the big budget stuff, because hot damn.
Well, and it's worth saying that bringing back up the pouty-lipped, blue-eyed Chris Pine, he is also starring in A Wrinkle in Time, in Ava DuVernay's A Wrinkle in Time.
Oh.
Which is, I think, and God, I wish I had the exact statistic in front of me, but I'm pretty sure was the second movie with a budget of this size to be greenlit.
Over $100 million?
Yeah.
Is that what it was?
So
I think that was it.
So K-19, The Widowmaker, is that not Catherine Bigelow? I think I believe that is the first film with a $100 million budget helmed by a female director, from what I read. That would be the – Ava DuVernay's would be the third, and that's also a Disney property as well.
That's funny. Now I'm wondering how much Deep Impact cost.
Was that?
That was Mimi Letters.
Direct? Oh, okay. Mm. Interesting.
Who is currently doing, like, not career best for herself, but career best.
Mimi Letter directed a film with Lili Sobieski?
Yes. I'm sure there were many jokes on set.
Okay.
But she's doing, like, not just career best for herself, but, like, career best of anyone's work on The Leftovers currently. So.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Which Michelle McLaren also directed for.
Yes. HBO, just grappling up all the best people. P.S., don't tell me anything about the finale of The Leftovers. I haven't seen it yet. I'm on vacation.
Okay.
I'm having a real bad time over here. So let's... Now that we've talked about the movie in general and the larger movie world and how it may or hopefully should be affected by this, let's talk some spoilers. So,
yeah.
I will say that whenever you have a hero that's this powerful, the best thing you can do is to challenge their morals and their what's the other word for morals that I can't think of right now?
Values.
Their values. Yeah. Uh-huh. And this movie does that, but it's kind of, I have an issue with the way that the movie ends, where Ares turns out to be a real dude. And they just get into, like, a smaller Batman v Superman / Man of Steel style fight.
Yeah. Yeah, the final fight sequence is real ugly and real, real just not a lot of fun. And I don't know. I'm trying to think of a film that has these kind of big, colossal kind of creatures going at it that is actually fun to watch.
I like the end of Guardians. I know you guys disagreed with me there.
Which one?
Guardians 2. Yes.
Yeah. I thought as far as that is concerned, they managed to wrap in a lot of other things that are happening while the main kind of battle is going on, so it's not just focused on that.
Sure.
This film is not that big. It's got the Chris Pine stuff going on, RIP. But, you know, beyond that, there isn't a lot else kind of going on. And so I think just having Ares and Wonder Woman fight and duke it out is just, I just cannot see how you can make that interesting to watch, and then also have all of these, because they got to destroy shit, and that's the unfortunate reality.
They,
is you can't really put them
shit
in a,
you know, like,
I know, and that's
shit
what I'm saying, but they can't put them in like a village, and they can't do them in, you know, certain locations. So I guess they just have to. Why is everything has to happen on a airport like runway? Like Civil War happens on an airport runway.
The
Last Avenger
yeah
happens on a airport runway. Like, man, everything just happens to revolve around planes for some reason.
It's just it's a weird thing visually too to think about. You know, in my opinion, I think the best sequence happens in No Man's Land in that village.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that is a area that is shot with a distinct geography. You have an idea that there's a main bell tower, and it's a, you know, it's this one street, and it's you can keep track of everything. And just the fact that we start in Thermoskira, and then there's this other big set piece in No Man's Land, and then we end up on a runway, like in a warehouse. Like it's just such a strange, sloppy choice. Like, even the fact that this seemingly last battle, which I knew the movie wasn't over as soon as, you know, Danny Houston dies without much fanfare. But that was such an odd way to even stage that, even as, like, you know, a false ending.
Well, it's okay. So first I want to know what Allison thinks. But then before we do that,
sorry,
I just want to say I was so hoping that he would die and then nothing would happen. And then she'd realize that Ares wasn't real and she would go through her whole existential crisis, and
sure,
then her battle would have to be to decide to keep doing it anyway. Like, you know, to make the choice to realize that there was a lot more work than she thought, but that, as Chris Pine said, you can either do nothing or you can do the right thing. But Allison, did you have any issue with the way that this movie sought its climax?
Yes, absolutely. And it was nowhere near enough to tank the movie for me, but it was disappointing. I will say that I agree that what was going on with her internally and the realization that there's not always just one bad guy or a clear line between good and evil, which I think is a theme in a lot of the best sort of epic fantasy storytelling, and one I really respond to, that I had no problem with. The emotional arc of the character, the philosophical arguments, I thought were all really well done and sort of epic and familiar and classic while still feeling really personal to this character and this story, particularly as it tied into what was going on with Steve Trevor and the sort of relationship climax and what all of that said about his choices and her choices. And you can save the world and I can save today, whatever that one was, I thought was really beautiful. But I think it was that rough and that sort of snidery, the moment when Ares takes his fingers and draws eye holes in his mask and the like molten, I was like, nope. And then I thought, imagine how much worse that would have been if it had not been David Thewlis, who really made the ramp up to the fight work for me when he's sort of appearing and reappearing. And it's not particularly cinematic, but God, what for a world, what I wouldn't give my kingdom for, a world where it would have just been that I don't want to fight you. I'm not interested in fighting you. I just want humanity to die. Because they're terrible and they're ruining the planet and they kill each other. And all I ever do is give them ideas for how to be more terrible and they use them on their own.
Yeah.
And then her debate is not, well, do I kill this dude or do I kill humanity? It's, is it worth giving so much of myself to people who may not deserve me? And then it's not about deserve, it's about what you believe, mm-hmm, et cetera. And all of that. Great. And then when he starts assembling the armor out of the pieces of the rubble, it's like, nope. this is starting to feel familiar in a way I don't respond to. And it was, it really let the air out of the balloon for me because I liked basically everything before then.
First of all, I agree with almost everything you said. Second of all, so sad that David Thewlis ended up being a bad guy. Because when he was like, you know, oh, I'm going to give you money and you can stay at my office, I was like, oh man, don't be bad, David Thewlis. Like, please, can we yeah. have one of these movies where one good guy doesn't end up being bad? You know, it's happened in The Winter Soldier, and you know, I'm not going to name them all. It just always happens. But he did. But then I was kind of like, you know what? If he fights her without becoming like a younger version or like a flame version, like if it's just David Thewlis fighting Wonder Woman, I think I'll be okay.
In a suit.
Yeah. Like with his little jaunty hat and his cane, I think that would be super cool, but it wasn't. He put on scrap metal armor and drew those eyes, and I was like, oh man, god damn it. And at that point, I kind of didn't know why she was still fighting him, because it was fairly clear that he wasn't making people kill themselves. He was just giving them fantastically terrible ideas as to how to do it. But
the film kind of walks that back towards the end as well, because as soon as he dies, you see like the German soldiers kind of look at each other and they're like, huh, hey, what's going on, buddy?
Yeah,
like kind of embrace. Yeah,
were we fighting somebody? Like, what's going on? I'm just like, wait, weird. Like, I don't understand, because you know, Dr. Maru or Dr. Poison or whatever you want to call her, like she is evil. Like she should be evil, and it shouldn't be, oh, he was just whispering in her ear and whispering in every soldier on the battlefront's ear. And I really, really enjoy the idea of Diana coming from this place of peace where she's basically been told that the gods created the humans and became jealous of them. Like they were so good. They were so awesome. They were so just like noble. And then she's like, oh, so when I go there, like the only issue that I'm going to run into is Ares. Like Ares is the reason for all of this. Right. And I love that kind of discovering that she can't help everybody, because there's not enough time. Yeah. And B, she realizes partly that not everybody over there is, you know, truthful and honest and, you know, respectful and all of these things. That has absolutely nothing to do with Ares. And I feel like the film kind of walks that just a little bit back in a weird way towards the end, because like I said, they make a very big point that Ares was just whispering in their ear, just giving them ideas, giving them the tools, not necessarily giving them the inspiration, right? And then I don't know. I just don't know what to make of that final kind of sequence where all the soldiers are just kind of looking at each other and like, hey, you know, what's up, buddy?
Part of me completely wonders why Ares is necessary, as Brian said, why Ares is even necessary in this story. I know obviously it's in the source material and everything, but I'm not convinced that it adds anything thematically for him to try to show Wonder Woman that humanity is also capable of evil when she's seen that throughout the movie. Like, there is a certain redundancy, I find, to his character and his monologue.
I think Ryan kind of hits it on the head, though. If she had killed Danny Houston and it turned out there was never an Ares at all, that would have been a hell of a way to kind of wrap up this film and kind of really put a bow on it and really put her in an awkward position and kind of in this place where it's like, yeah, dude, but I think maybe that would have felt a little bit like too much like mansplaining, maybe, for her to like just you know, have blinders on the entire time throughout this entire film. But I don't know. I think that would have been such a clever way to kind of get around having this big knockdown, drag out fight and actually have kind of a philosophical issue towards the end of the film where it's just like, yeah, there's no Ares, dude. Like,
sure.
you are Wonder Woman. You are a god. But your big bad is still out there. He's not here. So what do you think about that, Allison?
Yeah, I mean, I think that he's more interesting as an idea and less as a villain, right? Maybe if there had been more time to, I guess, build the world and what she believes about the way that men and women are corrupted, then it would have been more compelling, but it just feels so rushed. And which is saying something for a movie that's like 2 hours and 20 minutes long. It felt like I was with it and everything sort of fit together and the pacing felt right. And then all of a sudden we get this reveal and I don't have a particular objection to the reveal, but then it was like all the air went out of the tire. Because it wasn't a compelling fight and because it wasn't as anywhere near as interesting as the overall argument, which I also think probably deserved more weight and time. And also, like, it's got to be said that it's hard to have an action sequence that's supposed to top everything else when the best action sequence in the movie is in the middle and it's so good that it sort of casts other action sequences in different light. Like, it's certainly not like Wonder Woman becomes John Wick all of a sudden, but you know, it was that walk across no man's land and then straight into the village. That whole sequence was so thrilling and so surprising and moving that there was just no way to top it. I think it was kind of a perfect storm of a bunch of things that made it a little bit of a letdown. And still, that being said, it was just kind of a letdown, which if the worst thing you can say about a comic book movie is that maybe part of it was sort of lame, then you're doing all right.
And that's kind of where I fell down, because like towards the end of Batman v Superman, I was like, this climax is shit. But like, you know, so has the rest of the movie been. So what are you going to do? And during this one, I was like, well, this climax isn't great, but the rest of the movie was fantastic. So, you know, if you're tallying it up like innings, you know, scoring five runs every inning and then only scoring two in the ninth, that doesn't make you, you know, not have a positive score at the end. My analogy fell apart.
Sure.
But basically the idea is if a movie's terrible, the ending being terrible is only going to make it worse. Whereas if this movie's great and the ending is only so-so, and it's so-so in the way that every other bloody movie has been so-so recently. Sure. You know, it's almost like it's, at this point, it's a feature more than a bug, I think producers believe. So you just gotta hang on to it. I don't understand the purpose of giving her tinnitus so that we have to hear Steve's last words 5 minutes
twice
after he delivered them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even sure about that situation either, because there's also the question of she's a god. Does, like, is ringing in her ears an actual thing? Like,
okay, well,
like, I mean, come
Bill,
on, like,
we can talk
like
for
she
four
literally
hours
flies
about the biology of the Amazons, because she seems to age into her late 20s, but
yes.
I mean, if she was given to them to stop Ares, then that means that she must be thousands of years old, correct? And, like, time just doesn't have a place on that island?
Maybe so. Yeah, yeah, because she does make a point to kind of point out the fact that, like, Steve Trevor has a watch. And she's like, that's silly. Like, why would you need a watch? And he's like, well, we have jobs and we got to be places at times. And she's like, nah, none of that makes any sense to me.
That feels like such an echo of Casablanca, too. Like, it seems – that homage seems so – intentional that, like, it's just they kind of wanted to ring that scene for all it's worth.
I don't have any excuse for why her ears are ringing in that situation, and he's like saying goodbye, and then I guess she hears it again.
She figures it out.
I don't know.
It's like,
yeah, when, it's like, what? That doesn't make any sense either.
It's like when a friend says something to you, and then you say what, and then in the 3 seconds it takes them to re-say what they were going to say, you've already figured it out.
Sure.
Just because you sort of listened the first time. I mean, I get what they're doing, because dramatically it's more interesting for her to hear that when she's making this final choice about whether she's going to kill Dr. Poison or not. Which, by the way, great villain name. The Dr. Poison and Ludendorff are great villains.
I love when they gas their own generals, and they look at each other and they laugh wickedly, and you're just like, yes, this film knows exactly. The gas mask
will help them, but they don't know that.
Yes, specifically,
their accents are ridiculous.
Oh, it's ludicrous. And I think I sort of admire some of the things that they just don't attempt to explain. Like, honestly, the fact that she ages on the island and then apparently does not age after leaving the island, but Robin Wright is clearly in her 50s, and like all of the other women seem to have grown into middle age. And that's not explained. I love, love, love the moment when all of a sudden they're just in London and he says, oh, well, we hitched a ride and made great time, because they're tied up to the back of a steamship or something. It's just like they didn't even bother to pretend that somehow they were at sea forever. It's just like, nope, we're here. Or that all the people who speak German have German accents. Whereas every time they speak another language, it's subtitled, unless it's German, and then they're speaking English with a German accent.
I just admire that
they were like, you know, screw it. This is the most entertaining way to do this, so we're just going to do it this way.
I'm going to infiltrate the Germans by putting on a German accent.
I gotta point out something that I didn't even realize until it was pointed out later. I was listening to a podcast and they were picking up on the fact that in Themyscira, Connie Nielsen, Robin Wright, and the other Amazonians all have this weird kind of accent, because if you've ever heard Gal Gadot speak, she's got a very thick accent that, like, they're not going to be able to get around. And so instead of having her kind of try and fake a weird accent to kind of like not sound Israeli, they just went ahead and gave Robin Wright and Connie Nielsen and all the other Amazonians a funky accent, so she doesn't stick out like a sore thumb. And it's just like that idea, that kind of little touches like that are just so smart in like the bigger picture of like what this movie does. And like specifically when she puts on the outfit, we don't see that until the sequence on No Man's Land, when she finally takes off her outfit and reveals the costume underneath. Mm-hmm. We don't ever get to see that, even though we kind of see her put it on a little bit. You know, we see little glimpses of it here and there, but we never see it front and center until that middle sequence. And they play it up big, and they're so smart about the way that they kind of like keep that closed until that sequence. And then they're like, hey, check this out. This is a badass costume, and she's going to go punt and kick the shit out of a lot of people.
we should probably wrap up soonish. So one of the final things that I would like to say is this is a movie in which a woman fights a lot of people. And I don't think once does she do the Black Widow sit on their shoulders, wrap a leg around their throat, and then twist.
Yeah, the Hurricane Rana. Hurricane Rana.
Is that what that's called?
Yep.
Okay, yeah. She doesn't do that thing, which is something that I have, like, every female fighting anyone else thing that I've seen, that's, like, their move. But, unfortunately, this movie does continue, which is something that I've complained about since the first Spider-Man. The idea that if something is flying at you, the most effective way to dodge it is to flip laterally into the air, spinning. which is a personal pet peeve. I just feel like you could step to the side.
Not quite as cinematic.
No. It's not.
That brings up that reminds me of Prometheus so much with Charlize Theron and Noomi Rapace just like running straight at, you know, as this giant ship is like rolling towards them, and you're just like, run to the side, what are y'all doing?
People
y'all
in
bright
movies
like
refuse
scientist
to step
people
to the side. they will yeah. not move to the side. I think
there's a lot to be said to just to like actually say something specific about Patty Jenkins' direction and cinematography here is like, you know, it's weird that we say it's unusual when you actually get to see choreography from a way where you can follow everything. But this movie really seems like it takes pains to show you like a full range of movements, mm-hmm. showing the entire character. And that like, it's hard to underestimate like how much that helps you feel like the battles have a real impact and power to them.
They do a really, really good job of selling Wonder Woman as a complete and utter badass. Like a really yeah. good job. Like she is shoving people into walls and like the wall is breaking behind the people. And you're like, wow, that must have hurt. And
she punches
like,
a tank.
Yeah, yeah. I was about to say, like she shoulder blasts an entire church bell tower and just like walks out of it, and you're just like, wow, that was overkill for that, but okay, here we go. This
well,
is this movie.
That
the bell tower moment when she he's got the shakes, he's got some real issues yeah. to deal with. Everyone is fighting their own battles, come on.
Yes,
but when she pops up out of that bell tower, and it really is more of a like graceful stand, but in my head it pops up, it reminded me so much of the moment in Death Proof when Zoe Bell flies
oh,
off
yes.
the car into the field and you think she's dead, and then she goes, I'm okay. It reminded me so much of that, where the bell tower collapses and you think there's no way she made it out, and then she just pops up. But I agree that I think the action is incredibly easy to follow, and I also really appreciate how there are these little things that sort of teach us about what exactly her skills are. Not her powers, but her skills. Because we get to watch the Amazons and the Amazon army training, and we see that it's all about, there's that great shot of one of the Amazons sort of looking like she's falling off of her horse, but really she's kind of backbending to pick up a shield mm-hmm. in the battle on the beach, which I think is also incredibly well done.
Yeah.
We see Robin Wright yell shield and leap off of the shield, and with that incredible moment where she loses three arrows at once, and you track her going over the soldiers and them trying to follow her and they just can't. In that sequence too, you see Diana follow a bullet past her, and you can tell that she doesn't know what that is. Like, what is a bullet? I have no idea. I've never seen a gun before. And she watches it collide with someone else. And from there on out, Wonder Woman ruins so many guns. She breaks guns all the time. And yeah. it not only explains how it is that she's able to block these bullets with her gauntlets and is able to sort of stop and dodge gunfire, but also why it is when she destroys the tank and when she destroys the machine gun nest, and in the battle with Ludendorff when she shoots his bullet basically right back at him and ruins the gun, that there's this continuity from that first moment. And it explains her costume, because you couldn't do all of that acrobatic stuff that all of these women fight in the same style if you were more physically constrained. Mm-hmm. So it in a way sort of justifies this bustier and leather skirt that has been Wonder Woman's iconic costume for so long, because she couldn't do the things she does if she were more constrained. So then we get that incredible costume parade
yeah,
of her trying
exactly.
to kick in all the dresses with the great Lucy Davis, who I think is such a scene stealer in this movie as Etta Candy.
And we even get the little shout out to Superman when she puts on the glasses and Lucy Davis is like, oh yeah, like that's going to hide the fact that you're the most beautiful woman like alive. Like, yeah, that's not going to hide the fact. And then so during the alleyway sequence, I don't know if y'all caught it, but she definitely stomps on the glasses at one point.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I have.
So it's just like, yeah.
I have a question. This may seem like rabble-rousing. How long until someone writes an article that says that this movie isn't as feminist as we think it is because people keep calling her pretty?
It was today. Slate published it today.
I thought it was Salon, but okay.
Damn it. I'm on vacation.
Was it Salon?
I thought it was Slate.
I'm saying it's interchangeable.
It was Slate. It was definitely Slate.
Sounds like a real Slate take right there. Ugh. Well... Yeah. Damn it. Here I am trying to be witty, and instead, it's already
You're
happened.
Just being honest. Man doesn't deserve you, Brian. Man doesn't deserve you.
No. It's not about deserve. It's about what I believe. And honestly, I believe that man doesn't deserve me. Anyway, do we have any final thoughts on this film before we wrap up for today?
How are we supposed to know what the sequel is about without an after the credits sequence?
I don't know. Do you think that she went back to Themyscira and like told people what was up and then was like, P.S. I'm going back?
Well, spoiler alert, Connie Nielsen is in Justice League. So
really?
What?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure what's going on there, but something tells me the Amazons probably are going to get involved again. Somewhere down the line, but you know, someone, a lot of people have mentioned that a really smart play by DC at this point would be to go ahead and greenlight a prequel on just nothing but Themyscira, and just like have like some of those sequences that Connie Nielsen kind of tells a young Diana about, maybe fighting the gods, maybe fighting man, something like that.
Connie Nielsen told the story. Oh. I completely forgot to bring up how beautiful that like storybook scene is.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It reminded me...
It's really well done.
Yeah, it reminded... The style of animation and everything reminded me a little bit of, like, again, I'm going to bring up The Leftovers, the first season opening of The Leftovers. But that was quite beautiful. Very, very good art direction there. And honestly, I kind of wish that, like, every Wonder Woman movie would just be in the past, so that, like, everyone was a prequel to fucking Batman v Superman. You know, like have her go to World War II and then Korea and Vietnam and just like, who gives a damn? Like, just keep her period appropriate in places and just let's keep giving people non-canonical stories with her before, you know, grumbly Batman and sad Superman showed up.
Yeah, there's a lot to build on in Themyscira, and you know, I mean, I'd be interested in seeing even a director's cut of this that would, you know, build specifically on Themyscira. I mean, I have to think there's more scenes with Connie Nielsen and Robin Wright.
There may be, but I think the pacing, you know, keeping us there just long enough and then getting us off swiftly was spot on.
If there is any way for them to do a prequel just so that we can get more Robin Wright, I would throw so much money at it. She's so good, and it's honestly not that much screen time. It just feels like a lot of screen time because the impact is so big.
Yeah, when she died, like my heart hurt. I think it might be because I just love Princess Bride so much, but I was definitely like, we are losing some screen presence right now.
I was going to say the Congress, but yes.
Yeah.
Four people who liked the Congress.
I like the Congress a lot.
Oh, Jesus.
The Robin Wright and Chris Pine podcast. Welcome.
We could do that. We could make that a thing. Any final thoughts on Wonder Woman before we wrap up for today?
I have to say, I was really worried that they were going to do a Dark Knight Rises style. Chris Pine is actually alive at the end when they're walking up the board. The fact that they committed to it, I thought was great.
I am legitimately shocked that you thought he survived that, but
you never know. You never know.
Well, he does die off screen, and if anything that these movies and these TV shows have told us is that if you do not see a character die, that means they are still alive somewhere.
He's gonna get Winter Soldiered into the sequel.
Oh no, 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 no.
No, I think if there's any world in which Chris Pine continues to show up in these movies, it will be as like somebody's as Steve Trevor's great great nephew or something. Like the new Agent Carter, right? Honestly, that's a dumb idea, and I don't care because Chris Pine was very good in this movie. And I do think that I don't think there's any chance that they're going to say, whoops, nope, he's not actually dead, because otherwise, then he did this incredible piece of wordless acting before he dies, and it would have been for nothing.
It would be great.
I don't think they'll cheapen that.
So they were probably asleep in the, or, you know, quote unquote asleep in that hotel room for like, let's say like 8 hours. So that means that in every single movie, you could create a new flashback for her that just takes place in that room, equaling up to 8 hours of him and her like talking about anything, you know? So it'll be like,
I don't think there was a lot of talking going on.
Okay. So we'll cut it down to like 3 hours. All right. Well, that is our review of Wonder Woman. We were all very positive on it, with some trepidation, but trepidation that's really more attached to how superhero films are created in general recently.
I want to bring this up real quick. There was a post that I saw. Let me pull this up real quick because y'all are going to laugh, and it is greatness. And so, yes.
Okay. While Bill is doing that, I will say that I think that Civil War is still the only superhero film that's had like a truly subversive and also like meaningful climax.
What was the climax?
When they find the guy and it turns out that he's just like trying to show them the truth about the Winter Soldier so that like Tony and Captain America will have to have a fight, and it's like just a fist fight, and it's all about like the emotion and the betrayal between them rather than lightning and crushed buildings. It like shrinks it down from, you know, because the peak of that movie is the airplane fight. And then it shrinks it down. Like this movie.
The airplane fight?
The fight around the airport that we talked about.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Like the literal Civil War part. But in this movie, like they tried to one up the No Man's Land. And I think that when a movie has the balls to kind of make its final fight smaller, I think that's when the magic happens a lot. Bill, have you found
your article?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Allison, what were you going to say before we let Bill off the chain?
I agree, but I will say that the most satisfying ending to a comic book property I've seen is the ending to the first season of Jessica Jones, which got like sort of Netflixed in the third quadrant, as they all do, because all Netflix series are like 2 to 3 episodes too long.
Oh, yeah.
But the climax of Jessica Jones feels earned and emotional and subversive and triumphant and upsetting all at once, in a way that I wish that Wonder Woman had felt. But, you know, yeah. I also didn't sob through most of Jessica Jones, so I guess Wonder Woman still wins.
You know, it's always funny to me when people talk about crying during a movie, because I don't think I've ever really cried during a movie, but I did have a complete and utter, like, psychological breakdown after Manchester by the Sea, so who's to say what the proper reaction to something is? Bill Graham, what's the article that you found?
Okay. It's just a comment thread that I came across. It was underneath a Peter Travers Rolling Stone like poll quote, And it's just the setup and the execution of this is brilliant, and it just ties into everything that we've mentioned so far. Someone replies, "I'm worried about the message this movie is going to send to our kids." Someone else replies, "That war is bad and women are powerful?" Question mark. And the guy responds back, or person responds back, that they can expect more quality DC movies in the future.
Oh my God, that is actually the perfect way to end this review. Okay, yes. So that's our thoughts on Wonder Woman by director Patty Jenkins. You know, good work DCEU. God, we're not expecting more of the same in the future, sadly. But if you would like good movies in your future, all you have to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage, and you will get a 30-day free trial of Mubi. On us, Mubi is the streaming service where curators find some of the best foreign, independent, and all-around wonderful films and deliver them to you one at a time so that you never suffer from a glut of choice that leads you to just rewatching the entire series of Frasier all over again.
Oh.
That's not a personal story. All you have to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage and you will get your free 30-day trial of Mubi on us. Mubi. Better than sunscreen. So, let's tell the fine people where we can be found at home. And because I said I would give everyone a taste of what the weather's like here, when it comes time for me to do my final piece, I will step out onto the balcony so that everyone can hear the wind and the surf crashing. So, let's start with our guest, Allison.
I don't know what you're asking of me right now.
Where can we find you between now and the next? Oh, yeah. Where can people find you on the internet if they'd like to read more of your stuff?
Okay. So you can follow me on Twitter at Allison Chu. I'm published most frequently on Consequence of Sound, doing TV and film coverage, but I'm also the weekly reviewer for The Handmaid's Tale at the AV Club. And you can also hear me say other things where I will definitely also do some talking about how Wonder Woman made me cry on Podlander Drunkcast and Outlander Podcast, which is on Twitter at Podlandercast, on the Losers Club, which is a Consequence of Sound Stephen King podcast, that's at Losers Club Pod, and Debating Doctor Who.
Can I ask you something?
Yes.
Are you excited for The Dark Tower?
No.
Yeah, I know. I know.
And no, I think when the runtime came in, that's about when I went, well, that's so, yikes. Let's see. Yeah. I'm excited for Castle Rock. I think Castle Rock will probably be great, but who knows? Whatever, I'd watch Idris Elba do basically anything. It'll be fine.
It's a real shame that they wasted that casting on that film.
Yeah. Who knows? I could be surprised. There was a great DC movie this week. Write us down.
Anything is possible.
Left us up.
I will say, talking about crying while watching something, I'm pretty sure my wife nearly burst into tears when I showed her the trailer for The Dark Tower.
Oh wow.
Because that's
in a good way?
No. In an okay, oh my god, this was so important to me, it looks terrible kind of way.
Yeah, I'm with her on that.
That's the bad kind of tears.
That is the book series that got me into reading books. Like
damn.
As a kind of teenager at the time when I got into it, and I was like, I hate reading because I had read nothing but school books. And I found that series and I was like, what is this magic? This doesn't make any sense. I love all of this. And
I'm 250 pages into the first book at the moment. And I've been told it's about to be a roller coaster to through the rest of the books.
Yeah. You are currently going clack, 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 clack up the first ascent.
Right. All right. Well, okay, but this isn't... So, obviously, everyone here is very into Stephen King. So, what was that podcast again?
That's at Losers Club Pod. It's a weekly podcast on Consequence of Sound. So, you can also find it on their main page, consequenceofsound.net. And the last one is, because there are three podcasts that I do, because I have no idea what my life is. The last one is Debating Doctor Who, which is a podcast I do with Alistair Wilkins, the weekly reviewer of Doctor Who for the AV Club. And you can find us at Debating DW on Twitter.
All right, Bill Graham.
You can find me writing movie reviews on the Film Stage and freshfiction.tv, and you can find me on Twitter at KBobFG, and I'll probably send out some tweets about Wonder Woman here because finally makes me want to tweet about something.
Woo. All right. And Michael Snidell.
You can find me on Snidell, God damn it, on Twitter at Snidell.
Snidell
where
on
I will
Snidell.
Be, where I will be starting my pilot episode of the Chris Pine and Robin Wright podcast. And you can read my writing at the Film Stage and Pace Magazine.
All right, everybody get ready. I'm going to open my door. Holy crap. Okay. I have my laptop is about to get pulled out of my hands. Okay. Brian Rowan. You can find me on Twitter at Brian J. Rowan. But I'm on vacation, so I'm probably not tweeting that much. You can also find us on Twitter at Film Stage Show. You can find me writing at thefilmstage.com. And that's about it. I need to get back in my room because this is really terrible.
You missed your calling as a meteorologist, Brian.
What was that?
Yes, I agree.
I didn't hear what you said.
You missed your calling as a meteorologist.
Ladies and gentlemen, and tune in next week.